This is the Larry Mueller Show. I'm Jill Nadeau, and we are going to be talking about the Milwaukee Repertory Theater. And we have artistic director Mark Clements with us, and we're going to talk about the new season, the new performing spaces, and basically what it's like behind the curtain at the Milwaukee Rep. Let us know why you love theater. Give us a call, 800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Mark, thanks for being with us again.
Oh, thank you for having me.
You bet. One of my favorite topics, of course, is theater. So I'm really excited about the new space. It's called the Associated Bank Theater Center. And tell us a little bit about it. Now, you've kind of redone a lot of the spaces you had, right?
Yeah. So we made a conscious decision to stay downtown in our beautiful site. It's a classic building, and we felt it would have left a real sort of cultural cavity in the city if we did, you know, with the advent of FISA Forum and the Pabst Theater, the New Milwaukee Ballet and the Symphony Orchestra felt really wise to stay down. Of course, the building was a former power station, the Oneida Power Station, and then in 1986-87, it got renovated to a theater that we know now, the Milwaukee Rep. And at the time, it was a state-of-the-art building with three performance spaces within it, adjacent to the Pabst Theater, where we have a 50-year tradition of doing Christmas Carol. And when the architects came, they looked at it, and they were like, wow, you don't want to get rid of these beautiful foundations because you can't even build these in this day and age. And so there were a lot of reasons why we decided to stay downtown, but there were some things that we really wanted to change. For me, there are many, but I mean, I do think it's much more user-friendly. Audiences in regional theater tend to skew a little bit older. And so a lot of people stop coming to the theater, not because they have a desire, but mobility issues, ease of access, all of those things become a little bit more challenging as people get older. And I think, you know, I truly feel that this building offers potential for some of those people that might fit into that category to extend their theater going by 15 or 20 years. And the other cool thing is that the seats are much more comfortable. The sight lines are better. So, you know, there's not really a bad seat in the theater. And also we can do multiple types of staging, proscenium arch staging and thrust staging, if that means something to some people. But it means you can either have the rep like it was how we used to, or you can actually turn it into a conventional proscenium, like a frame, which will be very good for us moving shows to New York or further afield.
Right. And we're talking options. Options are important when you're trying to produce a show, aren't they?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think this will excite writers and directors to know that, you know, they're not just locked into one space on the main stage. I mean, I think we've done in the last couple of decades have done a pretty good job at circumnavigating the, you know, the constraints that we had with us. But I think, you know, this is going to be really offer some very exciting options and have a very different experience each time you come in, you know, which is what you hope to see on the stage. And now you'll actually feel it from your seats, too.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Now, is everything ready? You're going to be opening soon, aren't you?
Yeah, everybody asks that question. you know, and the truth is, on time, on budget, thanks to a lot of brilliant people who actually brought their A game to it. But, you know, I almost don't want to say those words. It's like when people say, hey, how's your show going? You know,
right. Just back.
And the last thing I want to say is brilliant, you know, because, you know, has a strange way of coming back to bite you.
Yes, well, theater folks are a bit superstitious, so I understand. Okay, so officially we're supposed to be opening. You've got Bernadette Peters coming, which is quite a coup. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so we wanted to do a couple of different openings. You know, this is an extraordinary building, and it has three different spaces. The Stackner Cabaret space is just having a facelift and a tweak and with its dressing rooms and things, but that's probably how people remember it for the last 2 or 3 years, because we did a fairly extensive refurb of that in 17. And then, but the main stage, and which is the Ellen and Joe Chakota Powerhouse Theater, and the studio, which is the Hero Frankie studio, they will both have brand new openings coming up. Now, the first opening was like, hey, we want to have something, a one-nighter, a real special ribbon-cutting event. And so, you know, we looked at who would be our top choices if we could get anybody. And we thought, in terms of living legends in the American theater, it doesn't really get better than Bernadette Peters.
No.
And so we asked her if she would come and perform and be the very first person to grace that, the first performer to grace those boards, so to speak. And she agreed to do that. So on October the 11th, we're doing that, ribbon cutting and a full day of celebration. And then we start moving into, there'll be a little 2 or 3 weeks while we load Income From Away, which would be our inaugural production in there. And it's doing really, really well already. I think people will love that show, and I think they're excited to see the new space and be part of history. So that will be in November.
Yeah, I've got my ticket, so I'm looking forward to that. I've been wanting to see that show for a long time. And tell people a little bit about what the background is on that, just real quick.
Yeah, it was based on a book. I think the title was something like When the World Came to Town, which is really what happened on 9/11, when a lot of planes that were in transit after the catastrophe and tragedy of the Twin Towers, and obviously the other flights in Pennsylvania, they were required, US airspace was required to clear all flights, get every flight on the ground, because at that time we didn't know obviously if there were more threats out there, if we were going to be having more of those incidents that many of us tragically saw unfolding on TV, on live TV. And so a lot of these planes needed to be grounded mid-Atlantic, and Gander is in Newfoundland, is a midway point, and actually had a sufficiently large airfield to take a lot of planes, because in the past it had been used before planes could do a whole transatlantic flight unfueled. They offered, the Gander offered an opportunity to refuel planes mid-Atlantic, so to speak. And so a lot of flights were naturally diverted there. And 7,000 passengers on that day landed in this little town in Newfoundland, which was just going about its business on that day, and ended up being a refuge for over a week for people who were grounded. Everything from first-class passengers to coach, animals on board, and really the town had to rally around and make sure that people had basic needs, sanitary needs, food needs. And this was a town that was sort of stretched to the limit, and the people's generosity knew no bounds. And so the writers of Come From Away read this book and this account, and of course we were familiar, those of us that were around at the time, with a lot of these extraordinary stories, and turned this into a musical called Come From Away. And it's just been a global hit. And right now I think there's a lot of productions. I mean, we decided to do it once they stopped touring it, and then we heard there's like 23 productions around the nation.
Wow.
And that's just in the U.S. And I think it was just because it's such an uplifting musical. Mm-hmm. And it's about a time when the nation was in fear and came together as a community in the best way that human beings could. And it was very emblematic of that And I think that story, in a strange way, I mean, you, whatever you say and wherever you land in the political spectrum these days, you know, there is no question we are broken at the moment and we're a very polarized country. And so I think this is theater at its best, offering up a way for people to literally sit next to each other in the theater and watch a time when people actually were at their most amazing. Yes. Is that even a word? Amazing.
Sure. It is now. Yeah, no, I agree with you 100%. That really is a pull, I think, that most people are looking for, that time when we all came together. So that's going to be a wonderful show. Again, that's Come From Away, and that's going to be the Rep's first show. When did you say it opened? November, right?
Yeah, I wish I had our press officer here right away, but while we're checking, I can look.
That's fine.
It's early November, and there's kind of a preview period. We have one performance, which is a private performance before we open, which we're going to invite all of the construction workers and people who are part of building this extraordinary.
What a great idea. I love that. I love that.
Yeah, well, if the a great thank you, a very exclusive thank you to them, and then also it will give us a chance to roll it out to the paying public and make sure, you know, it's very strange because we're working in a brand new building. So, you know, when I was putting musicals or plays on, I've directed, I don't know, over 25 shows, I guess, at the Rep over the years since 2010, musicals, plays, all sorts of theater. But I know every inch of those stages. I know how it sounded when you were in them, which seat you couldn't see a full human being and all that stuff. And now I'm going to be discovering all of that for the first time with the amazing cast I've got again. Yeah.
Oh, for sure. And Clara told me, our producer, that it's November 4th.
Thanks, Familia.
Yep. And tickets are available, of course. You just have to go to the Milwaukee Rep. Is it org or com? It's dot com. So yeah. Wonderful. Excellent. We are talking with Mark Clements. He's the artistic director at the Milwaukee Repertory Theater. If you have any questions about some of the upcoming shows or what the new facility is going to look like, we'd love to hear from you. 800-642-1234. Or you can send an email to talk@wpr.org. And this is the Larry Mueller Show. I'm Jill Nadeau in for Larry today. I want to remind you our next book club novel is coming up. It's called Beyond the Flames, and it's by Wisconsinite Greg Renz. Greg is a retired firefighter, and he uses his experience in the field to write stories about others who have this important job. And we're going to talk to Greg on October 16th, so time still for you to go and get that book. Again, it's Beyond the Flames, and you can join us on our book club. Right now, we are talking about the Milwaukee Rep with artistic director Mark Clements. So, Mark, let's, fun and games, wonderful, you get to put on a show and whatnot, but let's talk about funding for a moment. You know, we can kind of relate here at public media a little bit about this, but earlier this month, the Milwaukee County Committee on Parks and Culture rejected a proposed budget plan for funding arts groups, and they had proposed 25% cut on the money that would be split between many of the arts groups, including the Rep. And now it's gone back to the drawing board for the committee. How important is that funding to the Milwaukee Rep?
Well, I don't want to be disingenuous about it because every cent is important for a not-for-profit, as you understand.
Sure.
But I mean, I will say that we as an organization, while we're constantly trying to pivot to, different income streams and losing anything is obviously not a good place for us to be. But, we are in a way, we're very fortunate that we are not overly reliant on county, city, NEA funding. You know, when it comes in, it allows us to do more. So it is critical. It's really if you think about funding, we're a bit of an outlier. And, you know, there are being articles written on us in recent times. Recently, we were a cover story in the art section of the Chicago Trib. We're going to be a lead story in the New York Times in the not too distant future about how the rep is a bit of an outlier. But, you know, one of the things that I think is extraordinary about the rep is that, and including the funding of this $80 million construction, all but $2 million that came from the state of Wisconsin, 1.9 specifically, were funded individually from people who gave, you know, very large eight-figure gifts to people who gave three-figure gifts. And it really is a people's theater in that respect. You know, that money was raised, if you think about it, pretty extraordinary post-pandemic in 2 years, for almost from start to finish of that campaign. And we are very reliant on our audiences and our extremely dedicated trustees and stakeholders to make sure that we can do the work at the level we're doing it. But, you know, we... it's hard work for, you know, it's a competitive market for arts funding, you know, with both public and private philanthropy. And, you know, the rep is very organized and focused on what we need to do. And we think we provide a consistently strong program and progressive program of work, you know, in terms of the styles of things that we do and, you know, everything from sort of two-hander plays that are mission vision orientated to big gold standard musicals. We do that and everything in between. So, you know, I think people love that, and we're very fortunate that we work hard to maintain that and people support us. But, you know, when you think of what the rep does, you know, we have a $40 million footprint in the community and state, you know, which is a lot of money. If you think about it, you know, when you go to the theater, you're probably using one of the local restaurants or a parking facility, and so a hotel. So all of that, you know, is what makes a community really rich and vibrant. And, you know, the arts in Milwaukee, in the city, is extraordinary, you know, what we have. You know, when you think we're a city that is really 600,000 people.
And how many theaters? It seems like every year there's a new one out there. Oh, are you still with us?
Yes, I'm with you. I just missed your question.
Oh, okay. I just said, how many theaters are there in Milwaukee right now? I mean, there's so many. It seems like there's always a new one popping up.
Yeah, I mean, we are the largest producing theater in the state. You know, there's a very good theater, Forward Theater in Madison. There's a number of smaller theaters, Renaissance and Next Act and Skylight in the in Milwaukee. And then we have the ballet, and we have the symphonic orchestra, and we have an incredible music scene, you know, with Fiserv, obviously Summerfest, and the Pabst Theater Group that operate out of numerous theaters. But, yeah, it's a lot of arts. You can probably do something every single night of the year and still have options in a city of our size, which is pretty extraordinary in live performance.
It is amazing. And as you mentioned before, you do bring in a lot of money into the city. You know, we tend to think about sports teams doing that, but people really underestimate what the arts does bring to a city, don't they?
Well, yeah, if you think about it, you know, we do 700 performances a year. So, you know, that's a lot of performances. When I read the show report, on a weekend at the rep, you know, you've got maybe five shows on a Friday through Monday, that, you know, in three different performance spaces. So if you do the math, you know, that's a lot of show reports. That's a lot of shows just out of Milwaukee Rep.
Yes, yes. Go right ahead.
No, I was going to say it's like 15 shows just out of the rep in a weekend when all three spaces are up and running.
Right.
And then, you know, you've got 1,000 people a night coming to see Christmas Carol. So it is huge. Mm-hmm. And you know, we feel it, you know, when we've been shut, people, you know, if I go into a local business, people say, when are you guys back? We're really missing you. We need your people again. So I think this is a cautionary tale for, you know, our city leaders and our visionaries who plan, and both in our city and further afield, that, you know, you have to look at what makes a city rich. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, there are some big employers here in Milwaukee. You know, whether it's Northwestern Mutual, Harley Davidson, BMO Harris, Associated Bank, big corporations, and you know, they're hiring a lot of people. And one of the things when they're hiring their top tier people, and not just top tier, is what is going to be great about the moving myself and my family to a place. Yes, it's a prerequisite to have good schools and good medical facilities available. But what about the parks? What about the arts provision? What about the waterfront? What about all of the things, the events that make a city rich in its tapestry and make you want to live here? Because if you are recruiting in Milwaukee, which is in ice for 6 months of the year, as opposed to San Diego in California, you've got to have a pretty good argument, you know, for why you and your family should come here. And I think there are many good arguments. I mean, as somebody who travels a third of the year, I will say the restaurant and bar scene is phenomenal. I mean, just when I bring people from out of town to some of these top restaurants in the city, people are just blown away. They cannot believe that. We experience it time and time again. And, you know, all of these things feed each other. And so I think it's really important when, you know, city planners think about these things, about when you take something away, you know, it's like the Jenga puzzle. When you pull a piece out of the puzzle, are you weakening the infrastructure? And the answer is an emphatic yes.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah, and thank you for that. Very eloquent. Let's go on now to something that happened to y'all in August, and a lot of people, unfortunately, was flooding. And it wasn't your performance space, but it was your the place where you keep your props and your sets and your costumes. So tell us what happened there.
Well, yeah, and in truth, it was a little bit more than that as well. We call it our production facility. It's in Wauwatosa. And when we had the floods, it was like it never happened before in years and years and years. Like, they're calling it the 1,000-year flood. I don't know if there's an exact science behind it. You know, and people have got a lot of theories about forest fires amalgamating with a heat wave, but there were a confluence of happenings that basically created like 12 inches of rainfall, which is, doesn't sound much, but is a phenomenal amount in a very short time.
Yes.
To give you some context, you know, we are in a warehouse that has steel roller doors. So the sort of doors that you kind of might see at the back of a shopping mall, you know, or a supermarket, heavy. You know, if I gave you a sledgehammer, you probably wouldn't be able to hammer through it. And yet the pressure of the water, 3.5 feet of water in the space in a short amount of time, was enough to literally blow through those doors like it was a tin can, and have, you know, pieces of detritus, and it was raw sewage going through there as well. So it was devastating. So in addition to, yes, it is a place of storage. It wiped out 70 years of theater making. It was pretty awful. It wiped out a ton of audiovisual equipment that we were storing there only because we were actually building our new building. Mm-hmm. It's our beautiful set by Todd Ivins of Christmas Carol, for my adaptation of A Christmas Carol, that we've been doing at the pub since 2016. And of course, this year, it's a really important year. I mean, it's always important, but this year it's our 50th anniversary. And then in addition to that, it's now the place where we make our scenery. We fabricate it. So we were actually in the middle of just about to start prep work, and we just finished this beautiful center, billions of dollars worth of equipment. So it basically, the flood took out $7.5 million worth of damage that was insurance assessed. And so, you know, it's not just whether you can get the money back. It's just that some of those things are just irreplaceable for myriad reasons. And the reason why we're making scenery out there is because we actually now have the Hertzfeld Foundation Education Center where the old workshops were on site, which means now for the 25, 30,000 students that we serve in public schools every year, they can now come in and have fantastic facilities, not have to eat their lunch on the floor, not, you know, skew around a TV set to see a presentation, but actually can have state-of-the-art audiovisual possibilities and rehearsal opportunities. So it was a great thing, but then obviously we had this flood that just changed everything. And that was in the middle of August. And at a critical time, when we'd stored Christmas Carol, we were about to build Come From Away and our opening It's a Wonderful Life show. So those were out there. And the Lehman Trilogy, which was the set that was in storage. So all of that's had to be rebuilt. And as we speak right now, Come From Away is in San Francisco being constructed. Christmas Carol's being fabricated in Calgary, in Canada. So, yeah, we're on track. The team were unbelievable. The staff were just incredible. I never heard anyone moan. They were in impossibly awful conditions, hot, you know, wading through raw sewage. And, you know, it was a phenomenal job in clearing up and amazing how quickly they did it and the level of devastation that it left behind.
Well, that is really amazing and certainly a huge team effort to get all this taken care of. And so I'm assuming those sets are going to get put on some trucks and shipped back to Milwaukee. Is that how you're doing it?
That's exactly it. Yeah, I don't know exactly the timetable. I think Christmas Carol might take a little bit longer. And then, of course, the other thing we have to... Christmas Carol is a very complicated set. You know,
yes.
It's a double turntable, a lot of automation. So it has to be constructed in a place where we can see that it's actually working. You know, if it's like, it's equivalent to Disney touring Lion King or something like that. You know, it's a lot of moving parts, and you have to make sure that that's all working. And you have a very short amount of time to load into the Pabst Theater. I think they were very generous and helped us find an extra couple of days, given the circumstances. But it's still going to be really tight. But, you know, we are absolutely dedicated to the show must go on. And all of those shows will open on time. And we were very fortunate in the flood that the building was not harmed. And in fact, John Hunzinger is Hunzinger Construction, and John Hunzinger is the CEO of that company, was down here very early, that night and early the next morning, just making down in the basement, moving around, just seeing, you know, how things were and whether we needed to get bilge pumps in. And fortunately, we survived that particular test, which is a good sign in many ways, actually.
Yes. So when would you think you'll be able to start working again in that space?
It's already started.
Oh, great.
Well, yeah, I think it will. When I say it started, the space was cleaned out. What's going in there now is what was, you know, the basic tools. I mean, you're talking about some very sophisticated lathes and cutting materials. And so all of those have had to be replaced, repurchased, moved into where they were before, powered up. So our team, while they are building our sets elsewhere, instead of doing that, they're making sure that we'll be able to do the next tranche of shows, you know, which will happen in the next month or two. They're making sure that we are able to construct again in those spaces.
Mm-hmm. Well, good luck with all that. I hope everything goes along swimmingly. I hate to use that word, but I just don't I can't even imagine what it's like with all this stuff going on. How do you keep all those balls in the air, Mark?
Well, you know, it's a fantastic team. I think, you know, we've got good people in all areas of the operation, you know, experienced people. And, you know, they're very, they've adapted so well. You know, Melissa Bartanian, who is our, for example, who is our managing director, she's been overseeing the building with Stephen Chamberlain, who's our kind of on-site, like, project manager for one. He's far more important than that, but that's the term that describes what he does. And they have really, you know, Melissa's a theater person. She started off as a technical director, went as a production manager, and then into management and general management. And, you know, she's literally overseeing everything from the wallpaper that goes up to the seats. Are they kind of, you know, what we said they were, the fabric finishes? And so people have had to learn a whole load of skills. I mean, for example, I was brought into EUA, which are our architects in Milwaukee-based firm, and to look at the lighting for each area. And I had no idea, I think, at that point. Scenic lighting, obviously, I'm extremely show lighting.
Sure.
I'm very, and you know, I know my way around. But, you know, the kind of lighting that makes a restaurant the right atmosphere, or makes a bar the right atmosphere, and it's a different wattage and a different kind of color and temperature to the area that you'd be coming in, where you would be, you know, at the box office. And so, you know, there are probably 20, 30 different grades of light or more, you know, to be honest, to create the right atmosphere. And so the detail is phenomenal. And we've had Fisher Dax in New York, who are theater consultants. All of these people top their game. And they do this all the time. They build sports stadiums. They build theaters. And so we've had the very best of the best. And with our Hunzinger Construction have been amazing as well. So I'm very fortunate in the joint leadership of the company that I am, that I get the opportunity to work with the very best people who can, you know, endorse decisions, even if I have to end up signing off.
Sure. We are talking with Mark Clemens. He's the artistic director at the Milwaukee Rep. And we're going to come back and ask him about some of those shows that they have in that upcoming schedule. If you have any questions, or do you have a favorite show that you've seen at the Milwaukee Rep, we'd love to hear from you. Phone number is 800-642-1234. Or you can always send an email. That's talk@wpr.org. And this is the Larry Mueller Show on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Jill Nadeau. Hope you can join us again tomorrow on the show. Larry's going to be back to talk wildlife with Scott Craven. And then we're going to hear about antibiotic pollution that might be harming our amphibians. That's tomorrow, starting at 11, right here on WPR News. Right now, we are talking about the Milwaukee Rep. And Mark Clemens, we have some really good shows coming up. We've talked already about Come From Away, and you mentioned It's a Wonderful Life, but we didn't really tell the listeners what this is. Why don't you talk about that for a little bit?
Yeah, It's a Wonderful Life. It's the actual title of the play. It's a Wonderful Life, a live radio play. And it's a sort of a group of people putting on a radio version of this amazing story that, you know, many of us connect with, you know, once a year, and offers up a different cautionary tale to life and living it to the full when you can and how you can, because, you know, you don't always know how it's going to unfold. And so it's a and it's a really beautiful piece, this, and it's got Foley in it and a great cast of actors, and I think it'll be just a really an additional lovely holiday kind of little jewel to have with, you know, to coincide with Christmas Carol, which is our, you know, our 50th anniversary this year.
Yeah, I was wondering about that. Now, are you concerned that you are competing with a Christmas Carol when you have two Christmas shows?
No, you know, I mean, any more than the Nutcracker, and, you know, there are some
True.
Other things. Yeah, I feel like sometimes it does feel like we're competing with ourselves, but, you know, we have very distinct audiences, and actually both shows are booking incredibly well, you know, and they're very different. One is very much a family entertainment. Well, they both are, really, I guess, but, you know, some people love to see Christmas Carol every year, and, you know, very proud. I mean, I know people who've seen it for all 50, you know, and... But there are also people who go, you know, I saw it. I do Christmas Carol one year, and then I do Nutcracker another, and then I do something else another. Sure. And I think this is also a piece that transcends just being a holiday show as well.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very entertaining piece of theater in the way they put this. It's funny, and it's kind of sort of tapping into retro charm, you know, maybe at a time when things were a little calmer and kinder in the world.
And when you're talking about Foley, for those who don't know, that's the sound effects, which people find so amazing when you're watching that live. I've done that show myself a few times, and, you know, people are like, "What? It's people reading, right?" It's like, oh, no, you forget about that the first 5 minutes, right?
Yeah. And, you know, and there's different ways of how you know, the director's approach. I know that Jonathan Pettit, who's our artistic producer at the theater, he's also directing this, and he's super excited by the cast he's got. And, so I think people are in for a real treat.
Oh, yeah, it's fun. And then we've talked about the Christmas Carol. But then coming up also in the beginning of next year, you've got The Fisherman's Daughter. Now, that's a musical, and it's set in Wisconsin. Tell us more about that one.
Yeah, so it's set up in the Door County area. It's this show that was made by the company Northern Sky, who do a lot of local stories and have created. You know, they're the guys who created Guys on Ice and My Dad's Season Tickets and those sort of things. So Fisherman's Daughters is this really. You know, heartwarming, was sort of made for Wisconsin musical, and it's with touching songs and, you know, very much homegrown humor that people who know that part of the world are very fond of, and it's a very Wisconsin thing. And
is that going to be in the Stackner, Mark?
It is, yeah. And that just that opens just after the new year on January 9th, I think. So, yeah.
And another one that you're directing is McNeil. Now, the previews on the website say that the audience is going to see jaw-dropping projections and special effects. Can you kind of give us a little bit of a hint as to what to expect for that one?
Yeah, so this play is really interesting and will kind of, for the size of that space, will kind of be something that nobody's ever seen before from a tech point of view. McNeil is by Pulitzer Prize winning a Milwaukee native Ed Axa. And we're the only theater in America that has done all of his works, and including I'm currently co-adapting American Dervish, which was Ed's first novel with him for the stage, which will probably not be next year, but the year after as a premiere. But McNeil is a regional premiere. It was done with Robert Downey Jr. in the title role at the Lincoln Center and broke all records. And it's really a play. Well, it's hard to say what it's about, but it's a writer who is accused of plagiarism and the intersection of how we use AI. And so it's kind of a very bold project. It involves a lot of tech about, with AI, how we distinguish between reality and what is AI. And as this kind of medium becomes incrementally more, exponentially more sophisticated day on day, I mean, I feel like AI is running faster than we as a society can keep up with it. And it's also specifically about a playwright, in this case, a novelist who's writing a book that is accused of plagiarism. But it's like, how do we differentiate between when a work is being plagiarized and when it was copied, stolen, or how was it heavily influenced? And so, you know, there's an example in the play where Shakespeare takes King Lear from another play very closely titled King Lear and takes the idea of a play but spins it into the genius work that we still perform 400 years later. So was that plagiarism or was it kind of influence? And as artists, you know, anyone who works in the arts or in the creative fields, we're all influenced by people. You know, if I think about what I was influenced by as a young director, the books that I was reading, the directors and the writers that I was watching, you know, their work is absolutely in my DNA, part of my DNA now. But there's a difference between, as most students will know, who now have their theses run through AI programs, is that... you know, there's a difference between, like, literally copying somebody's work word for word. And I think that's going to become more of a thing. You know, you've seen it in the music industry. Is that, you know, those sequence of chords, are they stolen from somebody who can categorically approve they wrote it before that other person that made a lot of money and were famous out of it? So it deals with a lot of those kind of things.
Absolutely. And one of the things I've always loved about The Rep is that you have such a variety of shows. I mean, they appeal to almost everybody. And because I've always had faith in what you've chosen, I have been introduced to some things that I probably wouldn't have done on my own to go out to see. What's the process like when you select all of these shows?
Yeah, it's the hardest thing. You know, we're actually a few days away of securing what the following season will be, believe it or not. Oof. And, yeah, and, you know, it gets down to the nitty-gritty of crunching it and budgeting it, and do we think how many people will come and see it, and what could we do with it, who could we work with, which formulates the budget. I mean, as you say, we are quite a broad church. We are not a theater that just does musicals, but we do musicals. We're not a theater that does just does new work, but we do a lot of new work. We try to do a new piece in each space. Each year, each season. So, you know, we try to make sure that we have diversity, cultural, racial, artistic variation. And also because we're a subscription theater, we, you know, a subscription is a great way of doing exactly what you just said, Joe, you know, which was, hey, I don't know about this play, but I've got a subscription. Maybe I add it to my 5, my 7, my 11, 12 shows, whatever. And you actually see something extraordinary. Yes. For me, the holy grail of going to the theater or a concert, the best case scenario is go in with a low expectation or zero and come out having experienced a shared experience, a seminal experience in your life that you'll never forget, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's the great thing about just whether it's a gallery or, you know, an exhibition or a concert, you know, where it just blows you away and you can't get over it. And that's amazing. And what we try to do is to look for opportunity within the subscription season to bring people to a different kind of work. So, you know, when I started introducing musicals to the main stage in 2010, when I came on as artistic director, there were a lot of people who were quite angry. You know, they said, we don't like musicals. That's why we come to The Rep. We don't like musicals. And then they would see something like my version of Cabaret or Assassins or Dreamgirls or Ragtime and would end up, you know, would end up kind of being, you know, just very, like, excited by it.
Yeah. Well, I do have to say that I did see your version of West Side Story. You did direct that, right?
I did, yeah.
That was amazing to me. I've seen so many versions, and everything was just perfect. So from the sets to the costumes to the singing to the choreography, everything just... it was just amazing, and I will remember that forever. How do you feel when that all comes together like that?
Yeah, I mean, that West Side Story was my starting point for that, specifically as you mentioned it, mm-hmm. was that I had seen that show a lot of times in my life, but I had never seen it how I'd hope to see it. So when I got, you know, I chose to direct it and we got the opportunity to do it, I was like, I want to do it how I'd always wanted to do it. So, for example, one thing, it's a very demanding score, right? Vocally
yes.
and dance-wise, acting-wise. So it's the ultimate triple threat kind of experience, as they say. And I wanted to make sure that those actors were really young and not like actors who were in their late 30s. Not that that's not young, but you know, we're looking at gang people who were 17, 20, maybe 15 in some cases. And there's a somehow an enhanced tragedy in that story when you're looking at very young people involved. So we were like, you know, we had a ton of people in that show who were straight out of drama school and untried, untested, and doing that show 8 times a week. But I think that was something how as a way in. So I'm always looking, like Come From Away is done in a particular way, and people love that. And we're not going to be reinventing the wheel on it,
mm-hmm.
but we come from... It is definitely going to, the aesthetic of that is going to be look and feel very different from anything you've seen anywhere else before, I would say. So I'm kind of excited about trying to take an idea, a bit like we said with McNeil, take an idea which is maybe not yours or not original, but adding something to it, enhancing it, and presenting it in a different way that is just as captivating for people.
And that's kind of the whole thrill of theater, is to see something presented in a different way. And every night's different, obviously. So yep. We've gotten through, you've got such a huge show. You're very ambitious this year. You've got so many shows going on.
Year.
Yep. Oh, my every gosh. So besides McNeil, we've got the Lehman Trilogy, which we had kind of mentioned before. We've got August Wilson's. Now, you've been doing a number of August Wilson's. You've got The Piano Lesson this year, which is really wonderful. And then for, again, music, Ain't Misbehavin', Fats Waller musical show. And Frida, A Self-Portrait. Now, that's an interesting show itself. But talk a little bit about that one.
Yeah, it's like an extraordinary show by Vanessa, who wrote it as well as performs it, about Frida Kahlo, the famous artist. And it's just the way Vanessa Severo, her name is, and she just how she portrays facets of Frida's life. And it's directed by beautifully by Joni Schultz, who's the associate artistic director at Cincinnati Players in the Park, who we work with a lot. And she created this show with Vanessa. It is an hour, 15-minute play, no intermission, and just delves into facets of Frida's life that we might not know about, or just kind of goes into greater detail about, you know, that how she had a hand disability. And as indeed does Vanessa in real life. So that's how Vanessa had originally connected with Frida, and the kind of who was an actor and then had a desire to write and portray her, and ended up writing this thing herself. And you know, this has been performed at numerous theaters, and this will be the second show in the new Harrow Frankie studio, which is going to be gorgeous. And I do want to say for people, you know, it's like the seats are going to be just more comfortable from an accessibility point of view. You know, if you had to leave in the show, you had to walk in front of everybody. Now there's exits out the back, and it's just going to be
wonderful.
The furnace is going to be beautiful.
Well, Mark, thank you so much for coming by and spending an hour of your time with us to tell us what's going on at the Milwaukee Rev.
Yeah, thank you, Joe. Great questions as well. Thank you.
Thank you. And so there's more shows that we didn't even cover, so go to the website, milwaukeerep.com, and, you know, just see what they're doing. I want to thank everybody on the team for helping us create these shows, Clara Neipert, Joel Patenaud, Lee Rayburn, and Jeff Robbins, and, of course, Larry Mueller, which will be back tomorrow. Thanks for staying with us. Have a great day.